Rento Radio Network are not necessarily those reflective of Rento Radio owners, affiliates, or local sponsors. Any hurt feelings and mixed emotions infringing upon the DC movement should be referred to Hernco's Human Services Department, which can be reached at blah, 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 to which time you will be told to shut. On behalf of Hernco Radio Network, I would like to take this time now to thank you from the bottom of our blackened souls. Thank you!
Ah, it is so good to see you again, sir. I see you have brought your friends with you this time. Very good, sir. Would you like your usual table? Right this way, then, sir. Please follow me.
Who are we kidding? We're not that stuffy.
I knew I was being threatened. Do you think it's worth holding out? I mean, I've heard some pretty ugly things about those guys. Ugly stories.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Politics Cafe, where we sit down and discuss anything and everything. No holds barred. Bring any topic to the table. We don't care. We'll discuss it. Come on in. Sit down. Take a load off. Now, the host of the show, Mark.
We are. Hey. Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and fellow conversationalists around the world. Welcome once again to the Politics Cafe, www.hernco.com, the best in internet talk radio. Politics Cafe is a small cafe located on an isolated stretch of the information superhighway, where we get together once a week and grill up some fresh topics for your digestion. And fresh topics we have aplenty here tonight, folks. Lots going on. We've got Evan Bayh dropping out of the Senate, or at least resigning from this point, saying he will not run for re-election. We got President Obama all fired up over that. We've got President Obama tonight. This is it. I got to lead off with this one here, folks. This is just unbelievable. The man is going to take the left and send them into an apoplexy. They're going to go nuts. I could see conniption fits hitting tomorrow because this is not around on our news. I actually had to dig out there, folks. And once again, the AFP, Agence France-Presse, has come through with this out of Washington. President Barack Obama will announce tomorrow plans for the government to help finance the construction of two nuclear reactors, the first in 30 years, a top U.S. official said. Obama, who has advocated reducing foreign energy dependency and cutting back on greenhouse gases, will use a 2005 law that authorizes the Energy Department to guarantee loans to projects that help reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Now, you're going to love this, folks. Obama has long believed that nuclear power should be a part of our energy mix, a senior administration told AFP, speaking on condition of anonymity. It's my favorite guy. I swear there's only one person out there that's always giving out these anonymous tips. The $18.5 billion in existing loan guarantee authority will be used to help finance the construction of two new nuclear reactors at a southern company plant in Burke, Georgia. Now, there have been no new nuclear power plants built in the United States since the 1979 Three Mile Island nuclear accident in the eastern state of Pennsylvania. Currently, only 20% of the energy needs are met by nuclear power. The operation will result in some 3,000 construction jobs and eventually some 850 permanent jobs, citing company figures. According to the official, Obama's 2011 budget triples loan guarantees for nuclear power plants to more than $54 billion. Now, you gotta love this, folks. This is gonna be more fun than fiberglass underwear watching the libs go off on this tomorrow. And I promise you they will, because this will get picked up by other news agencies out there. Of course, you can all say you heard it here first at the Politics Cafe. You know, with some of the latest news, that's what I always come up with, folks. You know this. But, you know, the funny part about this is he's doing this to tell you that he's going to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Well, you know, look, we're all being told out there on a daily basis that carbon dioxide is the great greenhouse gas. And, of course, that's all being disproven. We actually have one of the leaders of the greenhouse gas movement coming out today and stating that we're actually going through a period of cooling over the last 10 years, and which is basically what we've cited in the Farmer's Almanac. Over the last 10 years, the carbon dioxide emissions in the world have grown. They've gone from 3.17 parts per billion to 3.18 parts per billion, or maybe parts per million, or 3.78. At any rate, we've got almost a 25% increase in the amount of carbon dioxide in the air. Still, it's only a minuscule amount compared to everything else. But any of the climate scientists out there that you've been talking to, or if you've been paying attention, will tell you that the number one greenhouse gas is always going to be water vapor. All right, make no doubt about it. Okay, water vapor forms clouds. Water in the atmosphere is the number one heat-trapping element. Well, let me tell you something. You know, this article here that's over on the AFP news site has got a picture of the Exelon Byron Nuclear Generating Station in Byron, Illinois. And what's coming out of the top of those towers? Water vapor, steam. So it's kind of like, look, I can understand that we're going to get in and have a rough old time here. With carbon dioxide, we need to get off of carbon dioxide. And personally, I have no problem with nuclear power. I never have. I think it's a very good, clean way to go. Global warming, as I have stated in the past, is bullshit. It's not bullshit. Look, I firmly believe that global warming is going on here. Let me correct myself on this one here, because global warming has been going on since the last ice age, and it will continue until the next ice age. This is pretty much what any geologist out there will tell you. You know, the evidence up here in New England, where I live, where we're broadcasting from, has been studied by geologists for a long time. And according to geologists that I've spoken to around here personally, they've all told me that the evidence here points to at least four ice ages coming and going over the last 250 to 300,000 years. Well, fact of the matter is, folks, if there's been four of them in that amount of time, I think it's a damn sure bet that they're going to be another one at some point in the future. And I think a smart move here is not so much to try to cry and think that mankind is causing this, therefore we must curb mankind's activities. We got to stop the big corporations is what they're all really talking about. And I think we should be forming more big corporations here to prepare us for whatever is coming into the future. And because you ain't got to stop it. I don't care what anybody says. The earth will do what the earth will do. Beyond us. At any rate, I think it's. I can't wait till tomorrow. Can't wait to see what happens when the left has found out and starts announcing. I'm sure that, you know, all the code pinkos over there and everybody over at moveon.org is going to be cursing this, along with the folks at Democratic Underground, some of my favorite people over there. Yeah, just got to love it. Just got to love it. All right, also, into the depth, into what we got going on here. Biden, Joe Biden, this is something, as always, folks, try to stay ahead of things. Vice President Joe Biden will travel to the Middle East next month. The White House announced today that Biden and his wife Jill will visit the region the week of March the 8th. Biden will meet with key leaders, including Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak, and Jordan's King Abdullah. The Obama administration has been working to encourage Israelis and the Palestinians to resume peace talks. Secretary Adam Clinton said today during an appearance in Doha, Qatar, that she foresees a possible breakthrough soon. Hooray! Hooray for the Democrats. You just gotta love it. But I can't get over that they're sending Biden over there. Now look, you know, we've had a few things here. If you could blame everything that Bush on Dick Cheney, well, you know, maybe it's about time we start blaming everything Obama does on Biden. Not Biden's about as dumb as a box of rocks, you know. I don't know how this guy ever managed to get in there. He's slippery. Let's face it, folks. You know, I don't care what anybody says. I have said this 100 times in the past, and I'm going to say it into the future here. Barack Hussein Obama did not pick Joe Biden to become the Vice President of the United States. All right, Joe Biden was picked by the Democratic Party. He was paid off for something he has done in the past. All right, because the man's clueless. He's got, he's, you know, look, he follows the wind. You know, he looks and sees which way the political wind is blowing, and he sets his sails to go with it. I mean, he's just as bad as John Curry was when John Curry was in there. You know, I had a laugh at that guy, too. You know, it's like I always said before, John Curry was no leader. He's just the loudest voice in the mob, and he made sure he became the loudest voice in the mob and stayed that way. Because what else could he do? You know, there was a man. Hey, it's one thing you had a hand to John Curry, is that he believed in democracy. He believed in mob rule. Whatever the will of the people was, well, he should be there to represent it. That's the way he figured. I figured, look, they're always going to need a big mouthpiece, and hey, if it's going to be somebody else, might as well be him. All right, next one we got on the stack of stuff here. Democrat Evan Bayh of Indiana to retire from the Senate. Senator Evan Bayh, a centrist Democrat from Indiana, as if there could be such a thing, announced Monday that he won't seek a third term in Congress, giving Republicans a chance to pick up a Senate seat. To put it in words I think most people can understand, I love working for the people of Indiana. I love helping our citizens make the most of their lives. But I do not love Congress, Bayh said in a news conference in Indianapolis, where he was joined by his wife and two sons. The departure of Bayh, who was on President Barack Obama's shortlist of vice presidential candidate prospects in 2008, continues a recent exodus from Congress among both Democrats and Republicans, including veterans Christopher Dodd of Connecticut and Patrick Kennedy of Rhode Island. The announcements have sprung up in rapid-fire fashion amid polls showing a rising anti-incumbent fervor and voter anger over Washington partisanship, high unemployment, federal deficits, and lucrative banking industry bonuses. Now, Obama thanked Bayh for his years of public service. During that time, he has fought tirelessly for Indiana's working families. It goes on and on and on here to talk about it all. And it's a long article. I don't have to bore you with all of it. But at any rate, this is the rats are fleeing a sinking ship here. They can see what's coming. As a couple of people in the room in here have been speaking, and we are broadcasting from Politics Lobby 4, Patriots United Voice Room here on Pal Talk. This election, this fall, is going to be called the ejection election. Make no mistake about it. Every incumbent in there knows his time is done. And you know why? Because of the one thing that you hear about the least in the news on a daily basis, and that is, it's the economy, stupid. It's that simple. You know, when we we need to get jobs back in this country. You know, there's no way around it. You know, and you got all these idiots in there right now promising this, promising that, and have absolutely no way to pay for it. Now, they're going to sit there and tell you, well, we're going to raise taxes on the rich. Well, for what? There are no rich left. The rich are gone. The rich have taken all their business and gone to China. They've gone to Indonesia. They've gone to Malaysia. They've gone everywhere else. But they aren't here. Rons, if you'd like to talk on the mic in here and you got something you'd like to add to this, I have no problem with it, my friend. Just raise your hand. More than welcome. We just ask that you stay on topic and do not try to change the topic. But if you got something you want to say along here, raise your hand. Matter of fact, hey, yeah, I'll throw you the mic right now.
Hi, I
hey, you dropped the mic there, bud. Pick back up again.
All right, I got the mic. I just wanted to, I'm from Pennsylvania, and I want to talk about Arnold Spector. He was from what I understood in the past, he's been in for quite a long time. He was a Democrat, then he switched to a Republican, and now he's back to... Or no, well, he was a Republican, he switched to a Democrat, I don't know. Anyways, he's back to switching over to a Republican, that's what it was. So the first thing I said was right. I just wanted to know what you felt about that and, you know, how the room might feel about that.
Well, that's what you call a power-hungry son of a bitch. He just wants to be in power, doesn't care what it takes to get him there. You're from Pennsylvania. I'm originally from Philadelphia. You may remember the days way back when, if you're old enough, of a guy named Frank Rizzo, who was the mayor of Philadelphia for a couple of different terms there. And he did the same thing. He jumped tickets. He went from one ticket to the other. He didn't think he was going to win on one ticket, so he went for the other. Didn't matter. Frank Rizzo, the old chief of police there, wanted to be the mayor. That's all there was to it. He was going to be the mayor, come hook or crook. And Arlen Specter's the same way. Another power-hungry slug. I think the people of Pennsylvania should be asking him exactly what the hell his plans are. Now, folks, I'm going to tell you something. Rizzo was one tough bastard. There was no way around it. You know, you got to admit one thing. We had a low crime rate in Philadelphia when Frank Rizzo was there. Because he took no shit. And he gave the cops free rein there. He really did. But at any rate, I mean, there's a lot of things going on out there, and the Republican Party needs to pick up its feet on it. You know, make no mistake about it. It's, I mean, take this health care issue that's coming up here right now. Now, in a couple of weeks, they're going to have, what the hell's what we're looking at here? President Obama is going to be dragging in front of Congress members of the Senate, and he's going to be talking to them about the health care bill. You know, trying to answer what all the Democrats are out there saying. Now, why are the Republicans blocking this? Why are they blocking this? You know, how come they don't come up with any ideas? Now, I'm here to tell you, folks, and this is something that I have been communicating with every senator that I can get to listen. And I have emailed, well, half of the Republican senators are in there, and I'll get the other half tomorrow. But this is the email I'm sending them. And I'm going to tell you what it is. And as a matter of fact, I got on and I talked to Scott Brown's office today, our new one from here in Massachusetts. And it basically reads like this. Sir, in a couple of weeks, some members of the U.S. Senate will be called to a conference on the subject of health care reform. It has been suggested in some circles that the senators should not show up at all. Now, I believe this is wrong. I believe the correct thing for the Republican senators to do is for all of them to show up and act in unison. Now, the president may open a discussion with many things, but he will end up asking one of two questions. Either, why are you fellows holding up this process? Or he will ask, what ideas do we have to solve the problems that you admit we have to reform health care? Now, the answer here should be very simple and very concise. Sir, we believe that it is better to have 50 different states working out a solution than just a single federal entity. We believe that for us to take the U.S. Senate in some direction that would deny the states the resources and possibly the right to determine how they solve this problem would be to violate our oath to support and defend the Constitution. Sir, the 10th Amendment to the Constitution forbids us to take any such action. Now, at this point, spokesman should just shut the hell up. Say nothing else. Don't say another damn word, because I'm here to tell you that the next guy to talk loses. It's that simple. There's no way in hell Obama's going to be able to come back at this, because anything he says at this point in time will mean that he is willing to break that 10th Amendment to the Constitution. And that's exactly what's going on here. This is what they need to do. These guys need to get up in front of President Obama and just say, yes, we are blocking this, because we want to solve this on our state level. And that's the way it should be. This federal government has gotten way too far, stepped beyond its bounds. I mean, it stepped beyond its bounds when it took on the Federal Reserve years and years and years ago. It stepped further beyond its bounds when it took on the role of Social Security. It's been stepping beyond it with every single entitlement program, everything it has done to try to help people over down the line for the last 100 years. And it's time for it to stop. It was never meant to be this way. This federal government was never like that. I would far rather be fighting the idiots in our state houses than try to fight the idiots and the bozos down in Washington. And I look at it this way. If you've got 50 different states trying 50 different things, there's going to be a much better chance of you coming up with a winning answer. Or you will at least see that where it does not work, you know, and where perhaps, you know, complete freedom and liberty might work. I mean, you got to look at it this way. Suppose you're in a state, you're running a business in a state, and all of a sudden that state decides that due to some entitlement that they feel people need, well, your business needs to be taxed in order to pay for it. Well, hey, you're still here in the United States. You just turn around and say, well, if this state is going to tax me like this, I'm going to go find a state that will not tax me. Or I'm going to go find a state that's going to do a better job providing the services they say they're going to provide, or whatever it is that crumbles your cookie. So you have the option of picking up. You don't have to go very far. You can move everything. Hey, maybe you can move some of your employees. Maybe you'll have to hire other ones. But the state that you are leaving will be learning a lesson. It's actually going to be learning two lessons. A, what it did wrong, and B, what it could be doing right by watching where that business gets up and moves to. But when it comes down to trying to do this on a whole national level, well, where are you going to go? You know, it's not like you can pick up out of Maryland and move to Delaware. It's not like you can pick up out of Jersey and move to Texas. It's not like you can pick up out of Michigan and move to Florida. No, you're stuck. You're going to move out of the country, you're going to move out of the country, and then you are done. All right, then you're, hey, this country at least is done. It's gone without that. And this is where all of our brains are heading at this point in time. All of our smartest people, all of our inventors, all of our entrepreneurs, they're picking up and they're moving, folks. They're opening up businesses in China. They're opening up businesses in Singapore, Indonesia, Malaysia, the Philippines, a host of other little tropical islands all around the world and other places, third world shitholes. And people are going to sit here and tell me, oh, well, you know, Mark, the reason that they really go down there is because of cheap labor. You understand that? And I was telling them the same thing. Sit down and do the math on it, folks. Sit down and do the math. All right? Just look at a corporation that sits here in this country that has to pay 35% to 38% of its money. Suppose they make $200 million in profit in a year and they got 100 employees. We'll sit down and work it out. All right? If you're going to save a dollar a day on 100 employees, that might mean you're going to save maybe $1 to $2 million a year on your employees, even if the ones you get overseas are going to be working for nothing, even if you can get slaves in some country overseas. All right, but the fact of the matter is, just moving from here to Singapore will save you countless millions of dollars on your $250 million profit. And I think we worked the numbers out on this the other day, and I think it's a matter of saving $13 million as opposed to the $2 million that he's going to save on labor. So it's a joke. Now, this country here, what we need to see, what we need to have people coming in and doing in this fall, first and foremost is to reform the tax system so that we can keep business coming back into this country. We need to have the best tax situation in the world. It's that simple. You cannot sit down and tell a businessman, okay, that he is getting a better deal in a country that is charging him 38% taxes and regulating the living shit out of how he does business, than he's going to get when he goes over to China and he has to pay a flat 25% and pays no attention whatsoever to any regulations because they ain't there. You know? Well, that's what corporate welfare is. And who's giving the best corporate welfare there, Mr. Flynn? All right? It's the Chinese. And that's what needs to happen here. You know, corporate welfare, yeah, I understand what you're saying. You know, it could also be, how'd you like the bailouts there, AIG? You know, how'd you like the bailouts at Goldman Sachs? What have you there? Something else that has to be tackled by this Congress. The first thing this Congress has got to get under control is A, the tax situation. B, next thing it's got to come up, and we're talking about 2010, the guy that wants to get elected, gets my vote, is going to be doing a couple of things. His next thing he's going to be telling me about is, not after how he reforms taxes, is, I had this right on the tip of my tongue right here. Well, we'll get back to that. But the point of the matter is here, things got to be done here. Things got to be done to start bringing, investment back into this country. If he could sit down, I'll tell you something. If we just go for a flat 15% tax, how much business would come floating into this country from overseas? You know, think of all the people that are sitting in China saying, paying 25% here, I could be paying 15% in the United States. It's not slave labor. They're more productive. They're more ingenious. They do a better job. Hey, let's go over there. You might have to pay a little more in labor, but you're going to save a lot more in taxes. And that's what we need to do here, you know, before any of these guys get together. And then the next thing they need to do is to tell us exactly what it is they're going to chop from the spending in Congress. You know, a lot of things that Congress is putting on out there that the federal government is taking a mantle on have got to be pushed back to the states. Department of Energy, got to go. Department of Energy has done absolutely nothing. All welfare and all entitlements got to go right out the door behind them. Department of Health, Health and Human Services, should be doing no more than sharing information between the states and say what the state's doing and what that state's doing. Turn around and say, look, what they're doing for health care in Michigan is not working, but what they're doing for health care in Maryland is working, you know? So let's share information between the two. That's fine. I ain't got a problem with something like that. You know, you want to run a center for disease control down in Atlanta? I don't have a problem with that, you know? But as far as them sitting in there and just regulating the living shit out of our health industry, driving the prices up beyond where anybody can afford it, driving health insurance costs up beyond where anybody can afford it, it's just goddamn ridiculous. Okay, now we get somebody here saying foreign aid is visual. Yeah, we'll get into that for a minute. But Mr. Rance, you got your hand back up. Take the mic. It's all yours. Go ahead there, Mr. Rands. We're on the air here. We can't have any dead air time. Well, maybe he's made a step away there, but we'll see what happens when he comes back up. It's the EPA too. You're right there, Mr. Mike. You know, now you got it. This is where a lot of people out there will turn around, look at me, and say, "Well, you know, this guy, yeah, he seems like a conservative, but he's really a liberal." Like, nobody wants dirty air. Nobody wants dirty water. Nobody wants to pour shit into the ground that doesn't belong there. Now, grant you, most things that we use came out of the ground, and I don't have a problem putting them right back in the ground when we're done with it. I really don't. But contaminating groundwater with MBTEs, now that's a no-no. You know, but of course, who was it that brought that about? The idiots that thought they could build us a better gasoline, you know, and, you know, liberals and whatnot. And of course, you always find out the hard way with their shit. But, yeah, it definitely needs to be revamped and have people take a look at it. I mean, there's other things that got to be done here, too. You know, I am all for drill here, drill now, and I'm also for building more refineries to help bring the prices of energy down as it is. You know, I do believe that as an energy sources go, you know, look, there's a lot of give and take out there right now. There's a lot of people out there are going to tell you, look, the earth is still making oil, so we can go on drilling it forever. Now, the fact of the matter is the oil companies themselves actually don't believe this. You know, despite the new finds they're making, and despite the new deposits of natural gas that keep popping up all the time, the oil companies themselves firmly believe that we have reached peak oil. You know, and that, we, you know, in the next 5 or 10 years, we're going to start, using resources that are dwindling. But the fact of the matter is, all right, oil, when it becomes too expensive, will drive us into doing other things, no doubt about it, when it becomes dear. But these are what you call market forces, and I got no problem allowing market forces to dictate where things could go. Yeah, we could might take a look at electric cars. Now, I'm here to tell you that I'm personally involved in a lot of research on that, or at least looking and reading a lot of the research, and I've got a son who is performing some of it. And we got a long way to go before we get to electric cars. There's no doubt about it, especially when it comes to safe electric cars. But I'll tell you something, folks. When the electric car gets to be cheaper than gasoline, people are going to run that way. You know, make no mistake about it. You know, and that's the way market forces are supposed to work. When things are either A, perform a better service, especially if it's a better service for the money, or things that just become too expensive to use, people switch. People turn around, people move into other areas. You know, personally, I'd like to see a huge revamp in public transportation in this country. But you know why that'll never be held up? Is because every goddamn little city and town and nook and cranny in the world feels that it's going to have to use public transportation as a utility, and somehow or another gains the right to start licensing it and regulating it, which, of course, does nothing more than help someone monopolize it and drives the price up. You know, I take a look at what's going on outside of New York City right now and some of the various communities that surround it. The gypsy bus drivers, especially the ones that run up and down Bergen Lion Avenue over in Jersey, places of this nature. These guys are picking people up, doing their own private little business for $1 and $2 a shot. You get on Jersey Transit, you want to go anywhere, it's $2.75 a shot. Already they are doing a better job. And this is what you call market prices in competition. You know, I have no problem with that. I'd like to see a lot more of that going on. In all phases of society, in energy production, I'd like to see a whole lot more competition going on out there. Automobiles, I'd like to see more competition, all sorts of things, no doubt about it. All right, at any rate, though, some of the competition's got to go on. It's got to be amongst our own advertisers here at HernCo.com, especially my boss, Bob Hernandez. So, folks, we're going to take a short break right here. We're at the bottom of the hour. Do take a peek over at HernCo.com and see some of the nice stuff Bob's got for sale, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Politics Cafe at www.HernCo.com, the best in Internet talk radio. We'll be right back, folks.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called InventNow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the InstaDo. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. Then you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's great.
Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through.
Do your part by going to boostup.org and giving a student the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called inventnow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on, and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the inventnow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
All right. This next question is for Caroline. Caroline, if you take the bus 60 miles to school at 5:30 a.m. and the bus is traveling at an average of 30 miles per hour, how are you going to get to your prenatal appointment and still make it to homeroom on time?
Some students are tackling more than just their schoolwork, which is why more than 30% of them aren't graduating. But you can give them the boost they need to make it through by visiting boostup.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
And we're back. You're listening to the Politics Cafe at www.herncoat.com, the best in Internet talk radio. My name's Mark Belcher. I'll be your host for the second half of the show. Folks, lots more to go on here tonight. Too much to cover. I know I'll never get through all of it, but we are going to hit it hard here as we're going forward here. Now, U.S. is seeing progress in winning the Saudis over to Iranian sanctions. U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton wraps up a Gulf tour tomorrow, satisfied that Saudi Arabia is tilting toward a U.S.-led drive to impose tough new U.N. sanctions against Iran. Now, the chief U.S. diplomat's tour of Qatar and Saudi Arabia appeared aimed at isolating Iran from Gulf neighbors and piling pressure on China to drop its resistance to sanctions targeted in particular at Iran's Revolutionary Guard. In strikingly forceful language, Clinton said Iran is turning into a military dictatorship bent on acquiring nuclear weapons as the Revolutionary Guard begins supplanting the clerical and political leadership in Tehran. In a press conference in the Saudi capital of Riyadh, Clinton urged the traditional leadership to take back the reins of authority from the Guard, which she says heads the Iranian nuclear and missile programs. Iran last week began enriching uranium to 20% purity, which Washington and other capitals say adds to evidence Iran is seeking a nuclear weapon. Now, Iran denies the charge, saying the goal is peaceful nuclear energy. Seated next to Clinton on her first visit to the kingdom, Saudi Foreign Minister Saud al-Faisal called the chief U.S. diplomat a good prognosticator. What does that mean? She got a big nose? Adding he was inclined to believe her warnings on the Revolutionary Guard. Now, background, she says at any rate, I hope that this doesn't lead to what it gives an indication of, which is a very extremist policy, the prince said. He also said that sanctions are a long-term solution. They may work. We can't judge. Excuse me. However, Prince Saud added that we see the issue in the shorter term because we are close to the threat. We need an immediate resolution. It was not immediately clear whether Saud, who was speaking in English, was calling for an immediate UN Security Council sanctions resolution or some other kind of resolution to the perceived threat from Iran. U.S. officials declined to comment on the remarks, but told reporters that they were very pleased with the content of the conversation with the Saudis and Iran and the cooperation with them on the nuclear issue. The prince, meanwhile, played down suggestions that Riyadh could encourage Beijing not to block sanctions against Tehran by guaranteeing Beijing stable oil supplies in the event of a disruption from Iran. However, he appeared to say China would anyway go along with the international community when he said Beijing carries its responsibilities within the UN Security Council very suggestion from Saudi Arabia to do what they ought to do. Now, this goes on here, but again, I no need to go through this whole article. Folks, this is Hillary Clinton over there wasting her time. Make no mistake about it. Saudi Arabians lending their voice to the ever-rising cacophony of people who are trying to get the UN to level sanctions against Iran isn't going to make a hill of beans a difference. The Saudis are already scared shitless of the Iranians over there. Make no mistake about it. You got to understand that this goes a little deeper. Muslims, and neither one of them believes that the other is the true faith. The Iranians, of course, are the Shia Muslims. Now, the Saudis... All right. Now, they're divided down the middle. Most of them are Sunni Muslim. But a good many of them, even though they may have Sunni origins, are Wahhabist in nature. All right. The Sunni government has got more to fear from its own people than it has to fear from the Iranians. Now, the Iranians are actually a threat to everybody in the region. Make no mistake about it. The Saudis, look, the Saudis are counting on one thing in order to keep the Iranians out of Saudi Arabia, and that is us. All right, let's face it. Yes, we have sold much to the Saudi Arabians in the way of weapons, much to them in the way of airplanes and a lot of other things. We have trained many Saudi Arabian soldiers right here in the School of Americas in the United States. The Iranian nation is much larger and has got a much larger armed force that it can put onto the ground. Now, as far as the other crap that's going on in here, what they're talking about with Ahmadinejad replacing all of the clerics and others with the Revolutionary Guard, take that with a grain of salt, folks. First thing that Ahmadinejad did when he took over in Iran was replace all of the college professors with clerics. And he also helped set up and further out an advanced system of, and I can't say the word, but I want to say it's Basileer or something like this, at least what they call, which is the clerical representatives in every little ditch and town and a village that's all across Iran. And the fact of the matter is, in Iran, if you want to get a job, if you want to open a business, if you want to perform anything in any public sphere whatsoever, you have got to go down to these Basileers and get their permission. If you do not get their permission to open up a business, to take a job, to hire someone, to be hired by someone, or anything else, you are basically a pariah, and you might as well just try to figure a way to get yourself into Iraq or somewhere else, because you ain't going to make it in Iran. It ain't going to happen. Proved to be any more of a miscreant to them, proved to be any more trouble, and you will find yourself going right straight to Allah, or wherever the other place is that these people believe. I don't know. But fact of the matter is, the Iranian action years and years and years ago. And if the Revolutionary Guard is replacing some of the clerics over there, it's only because those Revolutionary Guard are clerics. It's that simple. But fact of the matter is, they're bad. You know, this is a bad way. It's the old socialist thing, takeover. It's the old collectivist takeover. You know, this is what goes on in these kind of places. You know, folks who live in this country remember what it was like right we got into with the Iranians. You know, when the Iranians started their revolution, when they kicked the Shah out of there, they took over our embassy and they performed their magical Islamic revolution. The first thing that happened there was all the smartest people in that country got up and hauled ass. They left. A lot of them actually came here. We actually had problems at the time with a lot of Iranian refugees that were running into this country, coming over here and not knowing how to act once they got here. Didn't last for a long time, and it was basically kept under wraps. But this is what happens when any collectivist, or when any government takes over in any country that preaches collectivism, which is what's going on here. Something I was trying to explain to someone else before the show here. You know, it's not so much the Islam that we're fighting out there in the world. It is the idea of collectivism that has been using Islam as a vehicle to ride around in and pull off its magic. Now, collectivism is generally, what it is, it's basically a political ideology, which means that you have to surrender yourself to the collective. It means that the collective is more important than any individual in the collective. The group of people is more important than any person who is in that group of people. And therefore, if called upon, and if necessary, any individual in that collective can be sacrificed for the greater good of that collective. Now, of course, it will never be that individual's decision that does it. It will always be whoever it is that is ruling the collective. Collectives do not work in any circumstances except by the rule of force, which is all government ever was to begin with. Let's face it, it's nothing more than force. It's nothing more than an entity which has the power of coercion. It's all it ever was. It's all it ever was in any society or in any country or in any place since the dawn of time. You know, a government existed because it had the power to exist, and that power came from the muzzle of a gun. You know, it's that simple. You know, now this is the first country in the world in the history of mankind, you know, that realized that the only way people would have that sort of a government is with the consent of the governed. Now, we as Americans realize this. Our founding fathers knew what this was. Make no mistake about it. George Washington himself once said that government is not eloquence. It is not logic. It is force. And like fire, it is a dangerous master and a fearful servant. It should never be left in the hands of the irresponsible. They knew this. They knew this back then, which is why when they formulated our Constitution, they put severe limits on what this Congress could do. Severe limits on what the Congress and the United States of America, what the government of the United States of America, the newly formed government, could do. You know, it was basically relegated to protecting liberty. And aside from building post roads, really didn't have too much else to do other than provide for the protection of liberty, which meant an army, a navy, and a Marine Corps. Of course, later on, we know everything had developed, including the Air Force and the Coast Guard and everything else that it has on top of that. But as far as everything else that is pulling off out there now today, regulating the economy through the use of a fiat currency, regulating healthcare through a myriad of regulations, regulating how society acts on every single little level has gotten way beyond the power that it was ever intended to be. Which is why we are calling for, in this fall, the ejection election of 2010. To get the bums out of there and get this country back on course. I, for one, want to see this. And I'll tell you something else I want to see everybody come here. I'm looking at it this way. You know, and right now I'm going to join with someone else. Not here tonight, couldn't make it. But Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, who is... you folks have known me for a long time, have heard him here on the show. Good man, very, very good man. And we believe that he is running for president at this point in time, or is at least behind the scenes doing this. He got down the other day, and he basically was on a radio down south for half an hour calling for Michael Steele's job, Michael Steele to resign. You know Michael Steele, the head of the chairman of the Republican National Committee. Because the Republicans are going nowhere. And the fact of the matter is, before people need to get elected in this country, they're going to have to be proven that they are leaders, that they are able to get things done on their own level. Now, I personally believe that, you know, right now the two biggest issues are, of course, the economy, and right after that, healthcare, whose healthcare is getting out of hand. But leaders want to get elected by us in the fall. They're going to have to fall into line with a couple of different things. Number one, they're going to have to work on lowering taxes so that we can get the economy stuff back up in this country. Make no mistake about it. Number two, they're going to have to work on spending. They're going to have to cut this to the bone and start getting rid of any functions that could be easily handled or much better handled on a state level. Got to go. Allow the states to fight out whether or not they need them. Number three, as far as healthcare and other things, they need to be community leaders. They need to get back and work into the communities and allow communities to do this themselves. Now, I'm here to tell you something, folks. One guy, all right, as strong as I come out for on the right, there was one Democrat out there that actually had a brain wave of an idea. And his name is Mr. Kent Conrad, and I believe he's from North Dakota. Kent Conrad was all into the idea of what he called healthcare cooperatives, all right, which is basically where small groups form themselves into their own little societies and work out themselves how it is that they are going to pay for healthcare. Now, I'm here to tell you that the reason that I like this is because it's really no different than small insurance companies out there that do the same thing. You know, when you sign on to an insurance company and you pay the premiums, you have joined that insurance company society. Okay, you, along with everyone else that is paying into that insurance company, are insuring with each other that if anybody gets sick, you're going to take care of each other. Now, I don't have a problem with that. I also look back through time. I look at where healthcare came from in this country years and years and years ago. All right? I mean, I take a look at all the big church, not so much the churches, but the big hospitals, the orphanages, the old folks' homes, the different healthcare clinics all around this country, and we'll take a note to the fact that they either got a crucifix or the Star of David up on top of them. All right, and these are some damn big hospitals in a lot of places. Take a look at St. Luke's down in Philadelphia, Nazareth Hospital down in Philadelphia. I can't think of the name of it, but the Mayo Clinic is another one. All of these places, many, many, many of these hospitals that have been around for longer than 50 or 60 years were all built by voluntary contributions from the members of the community. Now, whether it came out of the church plates, the church collection baskets each Sunday, or whether it happened because the community leaders milked the big business leaders and got them to put the money together, didn't matter. It still all came from a community level. And it came from communities that were functioning. Communities that were actually functioning, that had industry, that had hope, that had jobs, that had an economy that could support it. So first and foremost, if you're going to have anything in this country that's going to help other people out, you've got to have an economy that can support it. First. This is important. And then what has to be done is to take it back and put it down on the community level. All of the social services, where they should be. The worst thing in the world that you can tell an American is he's going to have to pay for somebody somewhere that he can't see or doesn't know. Because, 50% chance you're lying to him. You know? Stop and think about this, Look, somebody's going to come up to you and say, "Hey, Joe, you got to give me $50. There's a guy up in Walla Walla, Minnesota, or wherever the hell it is, it's really down on his luck and needs your $50. Can you give it to me, please?" Joe's going to look at you and say, "Get the fuck out of here. Beat it. I ain't giving you $50. I don't even know you." All right? However, if you were to come up to Joe and say, "Hey, Joe, isn't that your neighbor over there? Looks to me like he needs a hand." Joe isn't going to question it twice. Joe is going to look in that neighbor's direction, determine for himself whether or not that neighbor needs a hand. And if he does, Joe's probably going to walk right over there and give that neighbor all the hand that he can. Same as any of us would do for any of our own neighbors, which is why this has to go back down onto this level. Because I'm here to tell you, folks, that social services cannot be had under a one-size-fits-all federal government. It just doesn't work. All right? A, you end up building a lot of resentment among people. B, you end up getting a lot of one-size-fits-all programs that don't work for anyone anywhere along the line. Different communities that involve themselves in their own social help, okay, will be able to do much better jobs because they're, A, going to be flexible. All right, they're going to see exactly what it is. Each and every community out there is different from each and every other community, okay, which means they have different needs, different wants, and different resources. And how each one of them attacks itself or attacks each of its problems needs to be left up to each one of them to attack the problems on their own. You can't just sit there and tell them, one size fits all, you will pay for it through the federal government. And you certainly can't tell them that we got to do like we did with H.R. 3296, which is allow four or five of the largest insurance companies in this country to take over the role of health care providers, the health benefit providers, the qualified health benefit providers. This is the biggest crock of shit that ever hit this planet, Goes back to what I was saying at the top of the show here tonight. This is where the Republican senators need to step up and say, "Sorry, sir, but the 10th Amendment of the Constitution forbids us from taking that power away from our states. We were sent here by our states to protect our states' rights to do things on their own. We're not just blocking you, sir. We are following the Constitution." And that's what needs to be done here. We need to point out that Obama is indeed and in fact breaking the Constitution. He is not upholding and defending the Constitution. He is trampling on it. He is pissing on it. So as far as I'm concerned, if this man wants to sit up there and tell me he's president of the United States, better start acting like it. Which means you turn around and you tell the states, "Hey, you got a problem in your state with health care? Fix it. This is the United States of America. We've gotten together and united for a common purpose, the defense of liberty. Period. Beyond that..." Take it right back to your own state, buddy. Now, if your state needs a hand with something, well, we'll see if we can't get some of your neighboring states to help you out. Now, if they got some reason they don't want to do that, well, you're just going to have to accept that. That's all there is to it. But that's the way I'm looking at it. Now, on top of that, these representatives that we're going to hire this fall have got to come up with a much better way of being accessible to the public. Look, I'm here to tell you, folks, yes, it is indeed, in fact, easy. They can get on the phone. You can get on the phone. You can pick them up, and you can talk to the office of any representative that you so please. Very, very simple thing to do. All those phone numbers are all listed right here on the Internet. You have no problem finding any of them. But what these people are doing when you're not talking to them is what needs to be found out here. Now, I'm here to tell you, if you're going to really represent us, then we need to be able to be in contact with you, know what the hell you're doing on a daily basis, and, start talking to us. Start letting us know what's happening. Why don't you tell us which lobbyists came through to you? So I propose that every single one of our representatives down there opens himself up a room on Pal Talk and has one or two or three people on his staff available there during certain hours of the day. And at a certain hour for each day, he should be available on there to tell us what happened to him during that day. What it was he voted on, how it was he voted, what conferences he was into, what committees he is sitting on, what the committees have been doing, which lobbyists approached him with what offers. That's what really needs to be done. You know, if we're going to get transparency in government, which is something that really has to be done, we're sick and tired of seeing stuff going on behind closed doors. We're sick and tired of watching people go in behind closed doors and coming out with a bill of sale where they sold another chunk of America down the river or off to some foreign nation. We need to know exactly what the hell is going on there. And it has to happen on everything else. Now, finally, I would like to see, and I don't know how far I'm going to get with this one. I'll be completely honest with you, folks. But when it comes time to reform taxes, they're going to have to reform taxes all the way around the board. I'm here to tell you, folks, that you can't sit here in a country that says in its Declaration of Independence that all men are created equal and then tax everybody out there at a different rate. Or tell some people out there that the amount of money you're making requires you to pay taxes. But the amount of money that you're not making, lets you get away with it. Because I'm here to tell you, folks, that the way this is set up right now, this tax system, we have less than 50% of this country is paying taxes, all right, which means that more than 50% of this country is getting away with paying no taxes. Now, you keep them in this position, and they're going to vote anybody in there that tells them they will not have to pay taxes. But at some point in time, people are going to have to wake up and realize that if you're going to get taxes to be down, you're going to have to understand that everybody's got to know what they are. Now, I'm here to tell you that if we're going to have an income tax, that income tax has got to be flat. It's got to be flat. It's got to be across the board. It's got to be for everybody. Now, personally, I don't think it should be anything as an income tax per se. I think it should be a trade tax. I think it's a trade tax, and I think if pulled off correctly, it could be handled down and low in about the 3 to 4% range, which would be no problem for everybody. But I do believe that everybody is going to have to get involved with it, because when taxes go up, everybody should feel it, and everybody should be right back on the phone to their selected representatives and telling him, hey, I'm sorry, but you have been screwing us on taxes, and they need to get voted right the hell out of there if that's what's going on. But people who are paying no taxes do not feel this pain, do not understand what it is that drives our businesses overseas. You know, it's just amazing. People out there just have no clue whatsoever what the hell it is that they're paying in taxes, what is going on there. They got no idea, right? And that's what I'm calling about, is just for a flat tax across the board. Because if the taxes get too high, the people are going to turn around and do something about it, or they're not going to do it now. You know, it's that simple. Now, if there's something out there that everybody believes maybe we should be doing, and maybe we should raise taxes to do it, well, then everybody can decide whether or not to do it. That's the way I think it should be done. But the way I look at it right now, I mean, hey, look, I'm sorry, but if you don't have some stake in this country, if you're not paying any taxes in this country, hey, the only people you're going to vote for are the ones that are going to keep on telling you not have to pay taxes. You know, now, that sounds like a good thing, real good thing right up front. Yeah, I don't have to pay any taxes. I don't make enough money. Well, where are you working at? Who's giving you a job? Or did your job take off and go to Mexico? Did your job take off and go to the Philippines? Is it sitting in Indonesia right now? You know, is some slave laborer in China performing what you were doing 2 weeks ago? You know, that's what needs to be going on here. Yeah, see, you know, the 15% mark, I don't think needs to be a good is a good measure. I think it'd be a good start, you know. But I'll be honest with you, I think that if we taxed every single trade in this country to the best of our ability, you know, I think a flat tax could be had for about 3% to 4%. I really do. I'm a firm believer in it. I'll tell you something. Throughout history, throughout mankind's history, the most successful governments that had the most successful tax systems taxed at 5%. Now that what they, and the way they worked it was, they just taxed every damn thing. You taxed your pay at 5%, and they taxed whatever you bought at 5%. And it didn't matter what it was. You know, you go into the stock market, you buy 1,000 shares of stock, you can pay 5% tax on it. You know, you go out there, you purchase bonds, you're going to pay a 5% tax on it. You go out and purchase a car, you're going to pay a 5% tax. You're going to go out and purchase a home, you pay a 5% tax. Whatever it is, you know. Let the states do what each one of the states want to do, Ahmed. That's the way I look at it. It's up to the states. If a state is charging too high of a tax, people are going to get up and leave that state and move to another one. And that state is going to see where they're going. You know, the states themselves have got to be driven into more competition with each other on these sort of social issues. And it's got to be coming out of the hands of the federal government. That's my position on this. All right? The way I see it, all social issues should be back in the hands of the states. And the federal government should just wash its hands of it 100% entirely, once for all, forever, and for good. Because it's insane what they're doing. You know, it's just complete and utter insanity for the federal government to do this. Because what happens is, A, you steal the resources from the states out there that might want to do this on themselves. You know, and B, you lock up any research and development, you know, and gone, throw it away. I mean, I just take healthcare as one issue here. What would be more intelligent? To have 50 different states trying out 50 different programs and seeing the cream rise to the top and the rest of it get flushed down the toilet, or to have one overriding federal government come in there, impose its own plan, and basically take away the resources and quite possibly the right of all the rest of the states to determine what they're going to do on their own. Obviously, you know? Obviously, the best way to go about it is to throw it back into the hands of the states. Let them work it out. Look, we all know that healthcare is broken out there. Now, I'm here to tell you that a lot of the reason healthcare is broken is due to our Federal Reserve, the inflation that they have introduced to us. Because everybody out there, including all members of Congress and our esteemed Commander-in-Chief, I almost said it, will tell you that the biggest problem is the rising costs of it all. Well, I'm sorry, but rising costs equal inflation. Inflation comes about because you have got too much money in the, you know, which is a commodity out there. Okay, you know, too much money chasing too few goods and services. It's that simple. You know, if you had more people out there. And don't forget, you know, look, a lot of people are on the hook for this here. I'm not letting anybody off the hook. But the point of the matter is, you know, that until you get a supply, you get a grip on the money supply and the way things are working there, things are going to work out either. But first and foremost, what we have got to do is get into Congress and cut spending down. You know, make no mistake about it. And we've got to rejuvenate the economy with a tax cut. All right, with that, though, we are hitting the top of the hour here. And once again, it's time to close her down here. The tables are all getting piled high with the chairs. The waitresses are all, well, they pretty much have blown their feet here. But the lights are getting dim. But as always, after the cafe closes, the bar will be open. Folks, I want to thank you all for coming in tonight and listening. We'll be back again next Monday. Don't forget all the rest of the nice shows that are over there at HernCo.com, the golf show, the other political shows that go on Saturday morning. But, folks, I want to thank you all for coming and listening tonight to the Politics Cafe at www.HernCo.com, the best in Internet talk radio. Folks, we'll be back next Monday night. Thanks for listening.